You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to the Tom Hartman Program, but I am not Tom Hartman. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman today. We have a busy show coming up. In this first hour, Rush Limbaugh making some pretty interesting comments about Chelsea Clinton. Has Rush Limbaugh joined the 99% against the 1%? Or not against the 1%, but at least in criticizing the 1%. I can't believe I'm even asking that question. Chelsea Clinton, if you hadn't heard, she's becoming a top NBC News correspondent. We're going to go inside that story in just a moment here. Also coming up at 19 after the hour, the Occupy movement engaging in a national day of action right now. Big arrests in New York. I'm broadcasting to you live from Denver, Colorado. We've seen a similar crackdown here in Denver for many, many weeks. I actually just passed in the hallway our mayor here, who I like to call His Majesty King Michael Hancock, who has, along with our governor, His Majesty King John Hickenlooper, orchestrated major crackdowns using police against the Occupy protesters here, including now criminalizing people who are honking their horns in support of the Occupy movement. We're going to go inside those stories coming up at 19 after the hour. Then at 35 after the hour, smokers being penalized with health insurance premium increases. More and more smokers at work having to pay higher health care costs, higher health premiums because of their smoking. And then coming up at around near the top of the hour, a new study showing that health insurance premiums are spiking for everybody in every state. I thought the health care bill was supposed to stop this. I guess not. Again, I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. If you want to weigh in on anything that you're hearing in the conversation here, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-TOM or 866-745-2667. I am usually the host of the morning show on AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk, but I'm guest hosting for Tom this morning as well. And this morning or this afternoon, wherever you're listening to us, you can also find our website, tomhartman.com, if you want to listen online or send us an instant message, an email. If you want to send me an email, davidsirota.com. All right, let's go inside the first subject of today, a subject that I think is really, really fascinating. And it touches on the Occupy Wall Street situation in the sense that maybe Republicans, some Republicans, are starting to figure it out. Is it possible that some Republicans are starting to figure out just how powerful the Occupy sentiment really is in America? And I give to you as Exhibit A, Rush Limbaugh. I cannot believe I'm going to find myself in agreement with Rush Limbaugh. And some of you are going to get, I know, you're going to get ticked off at me for saying that I agree with Rush Limbaugh. But here's what happened just a couple days ago. Chelsea Clinton, the daughter of the Secretary of State and the former president, has been named to be a top correspondent with NBC News. Chelsea Clinton has zero journalistic credentials. She's never been a journalist. She's never granted, as far as I can tell, a major television interview. But she was named a top correspondent for NBC News. Glenn Greenwald, my colleague at Salon.com, I'm also a writer at Salon, he had written a piece about how this is yet more proof that there is no meritocracy, either in the media or really in America at large. That you take somebody who's only claim to fame in terms of media credentials is that she's got a well-known last name, no actual journalistic credentials. And Glenn Greenwald had made the point that this proves this is yet another piece of evidence that suggests that there is a meritocracy in this country, and there certainly is a meritocracy in the media. Rush Limbaugh, none other than Rush Limbaugh, then the next day made the argument that this is exactly what the Occupy Wall Street folks are protesting against. Now, I'm going to play some clips for you from Rush Limbaugh, and I want you to listen to them and tell me if you agree with Rush Limbaugh. Tell me if you think this means maybe some Republicans are starting to figure out that the Occupy sentiment is real. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is usually the most adamant defender of the wealthy, and granted, his criticism of the of Chelsea Clinton is part of what I have called Clinton derangement syndrome. He's a Republican. He just hates everything the Clintons do. But there's a deep economic analysis in what Rush Limbaugh is saying. And I think he is exactly right when it comes to that. Let's play a couple clips from what Rush Limbaugh said. Here's the first clip.
Wanted to be elected. I mean, that's the family traditions. You got to be elected in office. You got to be good on TV. She has shunned the media. She's wanted no part of the media. She's openly stated she hates people in the media. Now, all of a sudden, she's at the top of the media. She's at the top of the ladder. She's paid no dues. She had not born on third base, born at home plate after the home run. She has not worked anywhere in journalism. She's never had a job. Now, that gets to the other point of this. Let's go down to Occupy Wall Street or wherever else that there's an Occupy, or go wherever there is a collection of liberals. What are they mad about? They're mad about the 1%. And what are they mad about the 1%? The 1%'s got it all. The 1% has everything, and they're not sharing it with anybody. And they didn't work for it. And the 1%, there aren't any jobs for anybody else, because the 1% are making sure they've got all the jobs and they've got all the money. So here we come with Mr. Democrat Party, the highest ranking, biggest star, most respected member of the Democrat Party, and with pure nepotism and nothing else, his daughter, who is unqualified for this job, gets pushed ahead of everybody that works at NBC and gets this job. This is the quintessential thing the 99% are fed up with, that they don't have a chance, that the game's rules are rigged, that everything's stacked against them.
All right, let's stop it there. So is Rush Limbaugh right? Is Rush Limbaugh right that Chelsea Clinton becoming a top NBC News correspondent, is this exactly what the Occupy Wall Street movement is really protesting against? Does this embody what the Occupy Wall Street protest is lamenting? And you know what? I think Rush Limbaugh is absolutely right. Does that make me a crazy person? Does that make me some sort of conservative? I don't think so. I think Rush Limbaugh, in this sense, is absolutely right. I want to play for you one other clip from Rush Limbaugh on this, and then we're going to take some of your calls. And if you want to weigh in on that question, if you want to give us a call and tell me if you agree with Rush Limbaugh, 866-987-TOM, 866-987-THOM, or if you're a conservative, 866-745-CONS. That's 866-745-2667. Here's one other clip from Rush Limbaugh.
All Bill Clinton had to do, pick up the phone and call Steve Kappas at NBC or Jeff Immelt or whoever, we don't know, and say, hey, you know, I have this person interested in working for you. Who, Mr. President? Well, you may have heard names, Chelsea Clinton. Oh, say no more. Because NBC doesn't want to consider the alternative of saying no. So here you have a very prominent member of the 1% who flaunts that membership of the 1%, greasing the skids for a child who's unqualified, inexperienced. What does that say to all these people with all of these thousands of dollars in student loans?
So is Rush Limbaugh right? Is this exactly what the Occupy Wall Street protest is protesting? If you want to give me a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-TOM, and we can discuss it. Also coming up next, the Occupy Wall Street National Day of Action. What does it mean? What kind of crackdowns are happening? We'll go inside those stories and take your calls. Coming up next with me, David Sirota, on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Should you be criminalized for honking your horn in support of Occupy Wall Street? That's what's happening in one city. We'll tell you about it coming up next.
What does that say to all these people with all of these thousands of dollars in student loans? Desperately trying, they think, to get jobs to pay off their student loans. They think that the game is stacked against them. They think that the rules are rigged. that people like them are shut out, don't have a chance.
That is Rush Limbaugh talking about the appointment of Chelsea Clinton to be a top correspondent for NBC News. He says that Chelsea Clinton being appointed as a top correspondent without any journalistic experience proves that the arguments of the Occupy Wall Street folks are exactly right. Is Rush Limbaugh finally coming to his senses? Do you agree with Rush Limbaugh? I mean, I can't stand Rush Limbaugh, but I think he's absolutely right. I think that the appointment of somebody like Chelsea Clinton, who has no journalistic experience whatsoever, is one little example of how we do not live in a meritocracy, how the system is stacked for the wealthy and the powerful. What do you think? If you want to weigh in on that question, we're going to take a bunch of calls on this. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-TOM. If you're conservative, call us on our conservative line, 866-745-2667. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. I'm the morning host here on AM 760 in Colorado. Speaking of Colorado and Denver, just a quick update on what's going on in the Occupy Wall Street protests right now. Today is a national day of action, the two-month anniversary of the original Occupy Wall Street protests. Police are arresting folks down in Lower Manhattan as we speak. Here in Denver, the police have been cracking down for some time. Our state was, and our city was one of the first places to really throw the police at these protesters. Now they have made a crime out of honking your horn in support of the Occupy protesters. You cannot make this up. A big story this morning here, just emblematic of how we are using in this country police resources against peaceful protesters rather than to try to protect peaceful protesters' civil liberties. Here in Denver, if you drive by the protest and you honk, apparently police are now ticketing you. They're assessing you a ticket, even though, of course, at a Broncos game, if you honk your horn in support of the Broncos, you don't get a ticket for that. The selective enforcement of ordinances, municipal ordinances designed to crack down on your First Amendment rights. This is not what democracy looks like. This is what a police state looks like. All right, we're going to get your response to Rush Limbaugh. Do you think Rush Limbaugh is right? Do you think the appointment of somebody like Chelsea Clinton to a top NBC News position is one little example of how our system really is rigged for the rich, the powerful, and the elite? Let's go to the phones and see what you think. We will start, if I can get my computer going here, we will start with, let's see, let's start with, what is it, John, in Dana Point, California. John, you're on AM 760.
David, it's actually Joran. But
oh, Joran, my bad, I apologize.
Not a problem. I do want to say that while this is an example of many of the grievances that people have had, and I personally have been to Occupy LA 5 times in the last month, it is not the only thing, and I think it's curious that Rush Limbaugh is now trying to, you know, side, so to speak, or at least in word, with the idea that the 1%, you know, are completely getting an unfair advantage over everybody through nepotism and knowing who you know and all that stuff. But I will say that Chelsea Clinton, as much as I want to be positive about her and positive about what she's got there with the job at NBC, I don't think that it's fair. There are a lot of people who worked very hard and very long to come to a similar position with NBC and are being passed over because, much like you said and Russ said, the reality is that she's the daughter of a former president and the current Secretary of State. She's getting unfair benefit because of that.
And that's the whole point. Now, I think Rush Limbaugh is completely disingenuous. You don't hear him talking about Meghan McCain, who got an MSNBC contract. You don't hear him being angry about that. But setting aside the fact that he's a hypocrite, I think he's exactly right. And the thing is, I don't want to attribute any value to the fact – I don't want to attribute any principle to the fact that he's saying this. What I think it reflects is that at least some people in the conservative movement now realize – are suddenly realizing the power of this sentiment of Occupy Wall Street. So in other words, I'm not complimenting Rush Limbaugh. I'm saying the fact that he's doing this and the fact that, frankly, he is right suggests that at an opportunistic level, even some top Republicans are realizing that they need to start talking about the unfairness of the system as well. Joran, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ellen calling in from Los Angeles. Ellen, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I totally disagree because Meghan McCain the Bush girls were roving reporters. Every celebrity.
Does that make it right? Do two wrongs make a right?
If I was the head of NBC News and I could get someone who lived in the White House for 8 years and had that kind of background, meeting all the heads of state, George Stephanopoulos.
Okay, so Ellen, to me, what you're suggesting is that journalism shouldn't be journalism, that America should be royalty. If your family or friends with rich people and celebrities and powerful people, then you deserve to be put not just on a reality television show. That credential alone means that you deserve to be a top news correspondent in America. And you know what that's called? That's called aristocracy. I completely and totally disagree with you. What you are making an argument for is aristocracy. You are making an argument for the idea. And think about what you're saying to journalism students across the country. What are you saying to people who go to journalism school? You're saying exactly what the president of NBC is basically saying, which is that it doesn't matter if you're a good reporter. It doesn't matter if you have any experience uncovering stories. It doesn't matter if you know how to report the facts. What matters is that you're a famous name. What matters is that you've hung out with famous people and powerful people. And this, I think, is exactly the problem in America. And by the way, I think Ellen gives us a good example. And Ellen, thanks for your call. I think Ellen gives us a good example of how this is not just an ideology of the rich and powerful themselves. I think this is an ideology that exists all throughout our culture. An ideology that we have come to accept, the worship
of
the rich.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up next, should smokers be penalized with health insurance premium increases that we all don't face? Stick around.
And what are they mad about the 1%? The 1%'s got it all. The 1% has everything, and they're not sharing it with anybody. And they didn't work for it. And the 1%, there aren't any jobs for anybody else because the 1% are making sure they've got all the jobs and they've got all the money.
That's Rush Limbaugh railing on NBC News' decision to hire Chelsea Clinton as a top correspondent. He's connecting it with the Occupy Wall Street movement, saying this is exactly what people in the Occupy Wall Street movement are upset with. It seems like Rush Limbaugh has suddenly aligned himself with the 99%. Do you agree that Chelsea Clinton being named to a top journalism position without any journalistic experience whatsoever is a good example of how this country is no longer anything even vaguely resembling a meritocracy? If you want to weigh in on that question, I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. If you want to yell at me, you want to agree with Rush Limbaugh, you want to disagree with me, I actually agree with Rush Limbaugh. And I think, not to compliment Rush Limbaugh, because I don't like Rush Limbaugh, I don't agree with him, but I think it shows that even some top Republicans are figuring out that they need to start speaking to Americans' concerns about a deeply unequal, unfair society. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466 if you want to weigh in on the conversation, or 866-745-2667 if you are a conservative. We'll get to it in just a moment. Very quickly, one story I want to tell you about that really caught my eye this morning. I think you should check it out as well. A New York Times report, smokers being penalized with health insurance premium increases. It's called the smoker's surcharge. More and more employers demanding that workers who smoke are overweight or have high cholesterol shoulder a greater share of their health care costs to shift towards penalizing employees with unhealthy lifestyles rather than rewarding good habits. I do think this is where we're going. It's a controversial issue. My guess is more and more places of employment are going to be dealing with their health insurance in exactly this way. The problem with it is, of course, how do you figure out what's irresponsible or unhealthy behavior? Smoking is an unhealthy behavior. Some might even say it's an irresponsible behavior. But what about skydiving? What about rock climbing? This is the problem with this in a society that doesn't have universal health care. Where do you draw the line on what is and is not unhealthy or irresponsible behavior? These kinds of questions are going to continue to come up as long as we have a major for-profit health insurance structure in this country. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. If you want to weigh in on Rush Limbaugh's comments saying that Chelsea Clinton being appointed to a top journalism position by NBC News exemplifies exactly the grievance of the 99% against the 1%. Do you agree or disagree? We will go to, we will go to Vin in California. Vin, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd ever get around to me. Just give me one quick second. I want to turn my radio off so I don't get confused here. I think what you're doing is just creating something for radio, because you're just leaving out so many other things. For example, this young lady has an education beyond that the average person will ever get. I think she probably graduated from one of our leading institutions, Harvard, Stanford, Princeton, something like that, right?
So you're saying that because she went to an Ivy League school, she deserves to be a top NBC News correspondent?
Well, that in addition to many other things. The circle of people that she associates with are not your everyday people.
Vin, you're saying exactly what I'm talking about. This is the ideology of worshiping the rich and powerful. The circle that she associates with, combined with her Ivy League education, makes her especially qualified to get one of the most elite jobs in the entire national media. Absolutely. Forget about whether she's been trained as a reporter. Forget about whether she's actually won any awards for reporting. You literally are saying the fact that she is surrounded by a circle of people makes her qualified. Isn't that the argument for aristocracy?
A circle of people that are in the know and very well educated. Let's take Noam Chomsky. We progressives love Noam Chomsky. But what political classes has Noam Chomsky ever taken? What makes him so qualified?
What makes Noam Chomsky qualified is the fact that he has sold millions and millions of books. People listen to him. Noam Chomsky, by the way, has not been put into a position as a reporter for a network news organization. That's the difference. It's a non sequitur. Nobody's hiring Noam Chomsky to be an investigative reporter at a news organization. See, what we are hearing, folks, here, I think, is... And there's two things at work here. And Vin, thanks for your call. There's two things at work here. First, there's the straight up partisanship. We can't acknowledge aristocracy if acknowledging and criticizing aristocracy means criticizing Democrats. So we live in a red versus blue society. And so liberals who will criticize MSNBC for hiring Meghan McCain, as they should criticize MSNBC for that, will say, no, Chelsea Clinton, she's qualified. She's definitely qualified to be a reporter. So there's partisanship going on here. I understand that. But the other part going on here is even more insidious. The worship of the wealthy and powerful. The inadvertent worship of the wealthy and powerful. She is qualified, as Vin said, because of who she knows, not because of what she's done. That is a defense of aristocracy. That is a defense of inequality. That is the opposite of meritocracy. And I can't stand Rush Limbaugh, but you know what? I think Rush Limbaugh is exactly right. And I think what's so amazing about this and what's so amazing about some of the calls that have come in is that the worship of the wealthy is so subconscious, it's so reflexive, that many people don't even know they are worshiping aristocracy. Let's go back to the phones. We will go to Alex calling in from Santa Cruz, California. Alex, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
It's included in the market.
Yeah. Okay, Alex is not there. I guess Alex is not really listening to whether he's on the air or not. We'll go to Carl calling in from Washington. Carl, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, David. I agree with you about the aristocracy point, and the only point I wanted to make was when I heard this is it very much reminded me back when Anna Kournikova was making all the money as a tennis player without winning a tournament, and everybody was all up in arms about it, and Martina Navratilova, of all people, pointed out she wasn't taking somebody else's money off of the, there wasn't another female tennis player whose money she was taking, because that money wasn't going to be there if she went away. And I think the same thing sort of applies here to Chelsea Clinton, in that I doubt very seriously that she's taken some legitimate journalist job. I doubt very seriously that they were.
Why do you doubt that? There are so few positions, and just speaking to you as somebody who's worked in journalism, there are so few positions inside of network TV news. Why would you assume that she's not taking somebody's position?
Well, okay, let me say this. I doubt very seriously that she's taking some serious journalist job. And this, again, this gets back to, we don't have very many serious journalists. So basically, she's taking a position that they would have offered to some other pretty talking head that might generate ratings. And that's not to say that this justifies them hiring
her.
I'll
meet you halfway. I'll agree with you there. I'll agree with you that the TV news has become something of a joke. To even call it TV news in many cases is a joke unto itself. So if you see TV news as basically one giant reality television show and not really a news program and not a journalistic endeavor, then you're right. I mean, you can say, well, you know, okay, fine. Who cares if they hired Chelsea Clinton? But part of the problem is the reason why TV news is so bad, is such a joke, is such an insult to journalism, is because TV news has succumbed to the aristocratic ethos. The idea
and
that
was going to exactly be my point, is that while Rush has a tiny little bit of truth on his side as far as this being a 1% thing, this is more, to your point, I think, an aristocracy thing, and again, just the complete lack of credibility of anybody that calls himself a journalist that makes their living on TV.
And I want to be clear. I want to be clear. I think that journalism, I would take it a step further and say the reason why journalism, TV journalism in particular, has become so celebritized, because that's what this is because TV journalism in many cases is owned by the very giant corporations that don't want us focusing on the real issues. So they give us celebritized quote-unquote news instead of real news that asks real tough questions, because those tough questions end up oftentimes raising questions about the corporations who own the news. If you don't want questions asked about corporate power in this country, then guess what? You hire Chelsea Clinton or Meghan McCain to be one of your journalists, because they sure as hell aren't going to ask any of those questions. All right, we're going to take one more call very quickly. We'll go to Alyssa in Tempe, Arizona. Alyssa, you got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. I would like to just attest to something. Having life experience does count for something. My father was a self-made millionaire. He didn't take any college courses to do it. He is a self-made millionaire who could probably teach a college professor who tries to teach about entrepreneurship a thing or two. Second, my husband's a professional musician. I did not go to school for music education of any kind in the music business, but I know all the ins and outs of it because my husband's been an independent, you know, musician for 12 years. So there is something to be said for life experience.
Well, there is something to be said for life experience, but I would suggest to you that saying that your life experience will make you a good journalist is such an insult to the idea of journalism. It's so offensive to me as a journalist. It's ridiculous. I don't care if you've got the greatest life experience in the world. If you don't know how to report out a story, then you don't belong at the top of the journalism industry. And if you can't see that, then my feeling is you got your head so far rammed up your rectum that you can't really see reality. That's just my take on this. We'll take a couple more calls on this coming up after these words.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We told you that smokers are paying higher insurance premiums. Now, insurance premiums spiking everywhere all over the states. We'll tell you about that study coming up next.
Tell the banks and the corporations we're here to occupy.
The whole world gone crazy! Am I the only one around here gives a about the rules?
Yeah, if that's your reaction to this story, you can be forgiven. The Washington Post reporting this morning, premiums for employer-sponsored health insurance have risen faster than incomes in every state in the nation, according to a new report out this week. We told you that smokers are paying higher premiums. Now everybody really is paying higher premiums. And this is exactly the angst, I think, that's happening in this country, driving the angst, and rightly so, filtering into and being expressed by the Occupy Wall Street movement. I'm David Sirota, filling in for Tom Hartman. We've been talking about Chelsea Clinton being appointed to a top position at NBC News. We've asked you if you think that that's an example, as Rush Limbaugh insists that it is, that this country actually isn't a meritocracy. We're going to turn now to back to the Occupy Wall Street events, what's going on in New York. Police have been cracking down in New York. They've been cracking down on the protesters here, where I'm broadcasting to you from, here in Denver, Colorado. And joining us now is one of the leaders of one of the unions that has been supporting the Occupy Wall Street movement, Mary Kay Henry, who's the head of the Service Employees International Union, one of the biggest unions in America, one of the biggest unions in the world. Mary Kay Henry, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, David. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you on the show. My question for you in terms of the labor movement's role in all of this, I'm a little bit confused. What I'm confused about is, and I'm reading here on at Salon.com where I write, SEIU's Balancing Act, supporting both Obama and Occupy Wall Street. As Salon writing that just weeks after issuing an endorsement of Occupy Wall Street, your 2.1 million member union also announced that it is endorsing President Obama. And a lot of people in the Occupy Wall Street movement have raised serious questions about the Obama administration's relationship with Wall Street and with the 1%. How do you square the endorsement of President Obama with support for the Occupy Wall Street protest?
Well, we don't see it as a balancing act. We see it as a commitment to two movements that are hopefully going to reinforce each other, David. The Occupy movement has drawn a spotlight in the nation on inequality. And we think the labor movement, our members are responsible for drawing attention to getting America back to work and being part of a broad jobs movement. And we hope that we will each reinforce each other, support the occupiers. They are determining their own agenda, but they've done a huge service to the whole country on the question of inequality. And we think we have to push for getting America back to work, making sure everybody pays their fair share, insisting that there's no more cuts to social programs in our country, and getting all immigrants to have a pathway to citizenship. So we think that we have to build a grassroots movement in addition to the Occupy movement, and part of that has to have our president reelected as a way to continue our movement for change in this country.
Do you think the Obama administration has been part of the problem, let's say, in strengthening or at least maintaining the power, the political and financial power of the richest 1% and of Wall Street?
Well, we think this president has been fighting for working families. We think he shares our vision and values, and that the stark choice we face as a country is because of what the Republican field of presidential candidates has been saying and the politics of division and hate, and that he has not been able to move things through Congress because Republican leadership are blocking and insisting that not everybody has to pay their fair share. They're protecting the top 1%. They're defending corporations that don't pay any taxes. And we just think that's wrong. And that's why we thought endorsing the president now made sense, why we have to continue to be in the streets and be part of a broader movement for change in this country.
Again, on the line with us is Mary Kay Henry, the president of the Service Employees International Union. In recent weeks, they have come out in strong support of the Occupy Wall Street movement, also endorsing President Obama for re-election. What would you say to somebody, let's say one of your members who came to you and said, listen, I'm confused here. The current president of the United States has J.P. Morgan's vice president as his chief of staff. That, and they can name all sorts of other people who are connected to the financial power structure in this country. I'm confused about how we can support the Occupy Wall Street movement and an administration that is chock full of people who are part of the very class that the Occupy Wall Street movement is protesting. What would you say to that member of your union?
Well, we've actually had those conversations inside our union, and what we said is what's up on our website, which is that there's a huge track record of success where this president has demonstrated his desire to return our country to the promise where you work hard for a living, you can get a good job, raise your family, and expect that your children are going to do better than we've done. And on the current path, the 1% are being protected by the other party. And so what we say is we have to look at what he's done and what he's committed to do, and then we have to build a movement for change that won't just elect him, but then will hold every elected official accountable to taking this country back for working people.
Out of all of the Republican candidates, I'm curious, from a labor movement perspective, which candidate you think is perhaps the most dangerous the field is such a circus.
David, I don't know how to pick one because they are all so incredibly scary to the future of this country. There isn't a one that doesn't want to scapegoat immigrants as part of the problem, and we completely reject the politics of division and hate. There isn't a one that doesn't want to protect the top 1% or corporations from not paying their fair share. And the President's Jobs Act actually makes the case that we need to close corporate tax loopholes. He wanted to tax millionaires. He is in favor of reforming the corporate tax system in this country, and all of them want to protect the status quo and actually make it worse from our perspective. So I can't figure out how to pick one out of the pack because they are all going to take this country in the wrong direction.
It is hard to, I mean, the field of Republican candidates becomes more and more both entertaining and frightening as every day continues in this presidential race. Mary Kay Henry is the president of the Service Employees International Union. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, David.
Coming up in our next segment after the top of the hour, you've heard that Ronald Reagan classified ketchup as a vegetable. Now our Congress is apparently classifying pizza as a vegetable. Pizza is a vegetable. I guess I had a vegetable dinner last night. We'll go inside exactly what happened and what it means for the diets of our kids in our public institutions, in our public schools. How could pizza be a vegetable? Only this Congress could produce such a ruling. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm David Sirota, filling in for Tom Hartman. I'm the morning host here at AM 760 in Colorado. I'm also a syndicated newspaper columnist, contributing writer to Salon.com. You can find out more about me at davidsirota.com. We've had a busy first hour. I can't believe I found myself agreeing with Rush Limbaugh. I feel dirty. I feel like I need to take a shower. Like, I actually was on the radio agreeing with Rush Limbaugh, who I really can't stand, but I think he got it right. I do. I really think that he got it right. And granted, a stopwatch is right twice a day, so maybe this is one of those times for Rush Limbaugh. But it was an interesting and combative first hour. In this hour, we've got a lot coming up. Coming up at 19 after the hour, do you have a problem with the Happy Meal? More and more cities considering cracking down on the Happy Meal. I used to love Happy Meals when I was a kid. We'll go inside that story. Then at 35 after, I love this. If you can't stand Ayn Rand and you can't stand Atlas Shrugged in particular, and even more specifically, you can't stand the movie, the Atlas Shrugged movie, you are going to love how they embarrassed themselves, the producers of that movie. That's coming up at 35 after, so we have a busy, busy hour for you. But first, is pizza a vegetable? I know that sounds like a ridiculous question. I know you're like, what are you talking about? Pizza is a vegetable. No, no, really. Is pizza a vegetable? Because your Congress apparently thinks pizza is a vegetable. This is some of the big news out of our food policy that's happened over the last few days. Why is pizza a vegetable? You remember that Ronald Reagan basically said that ketchup was a vegetable. Now pizza is apparently a vegetable. Joining us now to break down exactly what I'm talking about is Marion Nessel, who is a professor at New York University. Her terrific website and book of the same name, Food Politics. She covers the politics of what we eat. Marion, thanks for your time today.
Oh, glad to be here.
Okay, so for those who don't know what I'm talking about, pizza becoming a vegetable, why don't you just give us the details of what the story is out of Congress? Why is Congress basically calling pizza a vegetable?
Because lobbyists have gotten to them. What's going on here is what's at stake here is, if that's not too ridiculous a metaphor, is what kids are eating in school. The school meals that go to kids who are poor and the reimbursable school meals that the Department of Agriculture sets the standards for in schools have an enormous impact on the providers of the foods for those meals. If the Department of Agriculture says every meal has to have a certain number of fruits and vegetables, a certain amount of meat, a certain amount of potatoes or whatever, the industries that provide those are going to benefit from those regulations. If, on the other hand, the Department of Agriculture says they're not going to count the tomato paste that's on pizza as a tomato, they're going to count it as pizza, not a vegetable, then the purveyors of that tomato sauce are not in very good shape, and the pizza makers aren't very happy about it.
And if the Department of Agriculture says, which they did, that they only want kids to have a cup of starchy vegetables a week, the purveyors of French fries are not going to be happy about that. And if you're a food industry and you're not happy, what do? You go to your congressperson to whom you are giving campaign contributions, and you say, we think this is a completely ridiculous rule. It's not science-based. They always say that. And we think you should do something about it. And so Congress writes letters to the Department of Agriculture and says, you can't do that.
Now, I should tell you, this has been a local story here in Colorado with the potato industry. We have a big potato industry, or at least the potato industry's powers that be are hooked into our U.S. senators. We've heard our U.S. senators, Mark Udall and Michael Bennett, running around insisting that basically that potatoes need to be deemed in a certain more healthy way than perhaps they really are physiologically in your body. Not to overly diss potatoes here, but we're talking about French fries and the like, as it relates to these new USDA rules. What they have said over and over again is that, listen, when it comes to potatoes, for instance, let's separate out the pizza examples. Almost preposterous. I can't believe I can utter it without laughing. But let's take an example like potatoes. The Department of Agriculture, its new guidelines basically still allowing French fries essentially to be considered not only a vegetable but basically healthy. What the senators here, as an example, what they said to constituents in Colorado when trying to explain this is, well, listen, it depends on how you cook a potato. You can't just speak with a kind of a blanket mentality when it comes to something like a potato. You can make a baked potato, you can make a French fry. How is the USDA supposed to negotiate that for purposes of a school lunch and making school lunches more nutritious?
Well, the USDA did exactly what any agency would do. It hired an outside independent agency, in this case the Institute of Medicine, to examine the school lunch program and to come up with a set of nutrition standards. The Institute of Medicine did that. Its report came out a couple of years ago, and the USDA is following those guidelines. That makes perfect sense to me. They're not saying you can't serve potatoes. They're saying, how about presenting kids with other vegetables as well? So that's the potato one. The tomato one harkens back to the Reagan administration when at that time, the Department of Agriculture said, we'd like to consider ketchup to count as a tomato in the vegetable category. And in that situation, the Senate, bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats, said, that is the most ridiculous thing we ever heard. Ketchup is not a vegetable. Get rid of that suggestion. Wow, times have changed.
And I'm reading
now
here.
Now we have the exact opposite happening, where senators are interfering with the Department of Agriculture's guidelines and saying pizza counts as a vegetable.
And I'm reading here from a spokesman for the Department of Agriculture insisting that we're not really calling pizza a vegetable. What we're saying is that pizza with a certain amount of tomato paste on it can be a good way to deliver important vegetables. I mean, it's one and the same thing.
It's not the same thing, because the amount of tomato paste that's on pizza is less than the amount of tomato sauce that is required to be counted as a serving of a vegetable.
Oh no, and I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying the explanation is completely preposterous. I think most people hear this and they probably say, you know, this is how ridiculous our Congress is. I guess my last question for you, and again on the line with us is Marion Nessel, who is a professor at NYU, the author of a blog and a book of the same name, Food Politics. I read it every day. If we are still categorizing pizza as a vegetable, if we are still having senators run out there basically defending the French fry when it comes to health-related nutrition issues in our public policy. Is there any hope, and we only got about 30 seconds left here, but hope that we're going to fix things?
This is a clear indication that they don't care about kids at all. Parents should be outraged by this. Everyone should be outraged. Preposterous doesn't even get at the sense of outrage that everybody should have about this. It's appalling.
And I think you're right to highlight, as your blog always does and your book highlights, that as with so many other issues, you track this back to corporate money. You track this all the way back to the root of a corrupt system where money buys politicians, in this case, food industry money, agriculture industry money, money that, as you suggest, has nothing to do with actual nutrition for kids. Marion Nestel, again, is a professor at NYU. Her blog, it's terrific. Her book is terrific, Food Politics. You can find it at foodpolitics.com. Marion, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate it. This is a huge issue, for kids because, of course, these USDA guidelines were all about nutrition in schools, lunches in schools. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. If you want to weigh in, 866-987-TOM. Up next, we're going to ask the question, do you have a problem, speaking of food for kids, do you have a problem with Happy Meals? The Happy Meal. Remember the Happy Meal from days of yore when you were a kid? Now, some cities calling into question whether they are okay. We'll get to it coming up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Also, remember, later on in the hour, the best news about Atlas Shrugged you've probably ever heard. Stick around.
Imagine there's no pizza. I couldn't if I tried.
That's Herman Cain singing about the vegetable, pizza. Did you know pizza was a vegetable? Yeah, according to our Congress this week, pizza is a vegetable. So I guess Herman Cain's just singing about a vegetable there. I guess he was a CEO of a vegetable company. Godfather of vegetables, right? I mean, they keep saying he's was the CEO of a pizza company. I guess that means he was the head of a nutritious vegetable company. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman here. If you want to weigh in on what we just heard, Congress changing the rules to classify pizza as a vegetable, I guess to satisfy the tomato paste industry. Also, the USDA still qualifying potatoes, even French fried potatoes, as nutritious. We just heard from Marion Nestle, who said this is all about big money. If you want to weigh in on this, I'd love to hear somebody argue that pizza is a vegetable. Anybody? I dare anybody. I will put you on the air immediately if you are ready to argue that pizza is a vegetable. 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466 if you're a conservative, which I'm guessing that would be the line where pizza would argue, where somebody would argue that pizza is a vegetable. 866-745-2667. That's 866-745-CONS. Or you can email me at my website, davidsirota.com. I also want to throw in our discussion about food here. I want to throw in a discussion about Happy Meals in particular. Now, I used to love Happy Meals. I'm gonna admit that. As a kid, I loved Happy Meals. My parents didn't give me a lot of Happy Meals. We didn't get a lot of chances to have a Happy Meal. But when on the off chance that we did go to a fast food restaurant, I loved the Happy Meals. I loved the E.T. Happy Meal. Maybe that dates me. But I loved the E.T. Happy Meal. But now as a parent, and I have a son who's just about to turn one in a couple of weeks, the Happy Meal really bothers me as a parent because the Happy Meal is so clearly designed to market itself and market junk food to kids. Now, I ask this question, how you feel about the Happy Meal, because the Happy Meal is changing right now. I don't know if you've heard this, but some cities have been trying to crack down on Happy Meals, and the Happy Meal itself is changing. Last year, San Francisco passing a law regulating kids' meals, requiring them to contain fewer than 600 calories and 640 milligrams of sodium in order to be paired with a toy. So the idea is that if you define a Happy Meal as a meal that comes with a toy, and the toy is designed to sell the food to kids, San Francisco saying that the meal has to basically meet some minimal health standards. Now, Burger King has launched a campaign, according to Mark Bittman, the great food writer at the New York Times, launching a campaign to not only give the kids the crown, you know, the cardboard crown that always came with the Happy Meal, but also to tell kids that kids can go check off a box where a certain percentage of the money that they spend on the Happy Meal goes to a charity, a wildlife and environmental charity, an education charity. And Mark Bittman basically writes that this is yet another way to simply market to kids food that is terrible for them, food that is really bad for them, and that any effort to essentially greenwash or nutrition wash, if you will, to mix metaphors, junk food is an insidious effort, no matter how good the cause is. Do you agree? Do you think there is something insidious about Happy Meals? As a parent, do you think when you hear that, oh, McDonald's is replacing some of its French fries in the Happy Meal with apple slices, do you think that's good news? Or do you think that it's just another way for fast food to create a delivery system to your kids? If you want to weigh in on this, again, the number is 866-987-TOM or 866-745-2667. Remember, coming up at 35 after the hour, the best news you've ever heard about Atlas Shrugged, at least if you can't stand Ayn Rand. So we got a lot to get to. Let's go to the phones and see if anybody wants to argue whether pizza is a vegetable. Anybody wants to argue that Happy Meals are something good. If you want to defend the Happy Meal, if you want to take on the Happy Meal, if you want to give me some advice as a parent of a one-year-old who's going to, at some point, be exposed at least to the marketing of Happy Meals. What do you say to your kids when they ask you for a Happy Meal? Let's go to, we will start with, let's see, Kay, calling in from neighboring Kansas, at least neighboring from where I am. Kay, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi.
Hi, Kay.
How's it going?
Good. You're on the air.
I'm glad to be on the air. I just wanted to say, I've been listening, of course, while I've been waiting about the Happy Meal deal. And if it's bloody good marketing, and if you would put, you know, healthy food in that meal, you know, we'd be having kids eating healthy food. I actually was going to argue for pizza. That's why I called.
Please. So you want to argue that pizza's a vegetable?
It could be. If you put a full serving of vegetables on a vegetarian pizza, it's killer good and it's healthy.
Well, I think, look, I of course it's good. I mean, I love pizza. I love pizza. Would I call pizza a vegetable or a food that is nutritious? I mean,
but they're just counting. You got to understand. They're you know, you want to give kids servings of, you know, XYZ, and that's important. But again,
but here's the thing. The USDA is not saying, wasn't proposing to say kids couldn't eat a pizza. They were saying that for purposes of an overall weekly diet, there had to be certain servings of X, certain servings of Y, and they are basically saying that pizza is far more nutritious than it really is. Now, I agree with you. You can make pizza more nutritious, certain kinds of pizza more nutritious, but pizza as a vegetable, I'm just not buying it. Kay, thanks for the call. Well, very quickly, we will go to Danny in New York City. Danny, you got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi. I agree that pizza is not a vegetable, but cooked tomato sauce is one of the healthiest things you can eat, and the entire Italian nation of Italy lives off white pasta and tomato sauce with a little garlic, and it's a healthy thing. And also that white potatoes are not on food stamp programs because white potatoes are basically not very healthy.
Okay, well, I would disagree that that tomato sauce is one of the healthiest things out there. I think you can make more healthy tomato sauce than, let's say, less healthy tomato sauce. But I still don't think pizza is a vegetable. We'll get to more of your calls coming up next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Also coming up next as we debate the Happy Meal, the best news you've ever heard about Atlas Shrugged, as long as you don't like Ayn Rand. Stick around.
Yeah, in the daytime I'm Mr. Natural, just as healthy as I can be. But at night I'm a junk food junkie. Good Lord, have pity on me.
I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. Welcome back. We're getting your emails. I'm getting them at davidsirota.com. I just want to read out a couple before we get back to our discussion about whether pizza is a vegetable and whether you think municipalities should be cracking down on Happy Meals. San Francisco last year passing a law that Happy Meals have to meet certain health standards in order to be sold with toys. Do you agree with those kinds of regulations or not? I'm a parent. I've got a kid who's going to be 1 year old, Isaac. He's about to be 1 year old in just a couple of weeks. And I used to love Happy Meals as a kid, but now I'm kind of rethinking whether they're really very good or whether they're really kind of dangerous. We're getting your emails. I just want to read out a couple of them for you because some of them are really, really spot on. On the pizza topic, we get this. How can pizza be a vegetable when tomatoes are a fruit? That's a good question. That is a very, very good question. I mean, just on the technicalities of it. Tomatoes aren't vegetables. That's a very good point. Also, got a lot of emails about the topic in the last hour about Rush Limbaugh and Chelsea Clinton. A number of you were distorting what I said. I didn't say that the Occupy Wall Street folks are protesting Chelsea Clinton. No, don't take my words out of context. A number of you have emailed me about this. Somebody on Twitter's tweeting that as well. No. What I said is, and I think Rush Limbaugh is right, and I do think a stopwatch is right twice a day, so I never usually agree with Rush Limbaugh, but I do think Rush Limbaugh is right, that Chelsea Clinton getting appointed to a top journalistic position in the American media epitomizes what the Occupy Wall Street protests are against. They are against aristocracy. They are against inequality. They are against familial privilege. They are against nepotism. I wouldn't purport to speak for the Occupy Wall Street movement, but seems to me that's what, in part, the Occupy Wall Street movement is against. Are they protesting specifically Chelsea Clinton being appointed to NBC News? Of course not. Don't take me out of context. Don't take me out of context, because I choose my words very carefully. Also, before we get back to the phones, on the Happy Meal situation, if you don't like Ayn Rand, you're going to love this story. This is just hilarious. Now, you've probably heard about the Atlas Shrugged movie that was a huge flop. Atlas Shrugged, of course, the Ayn Rand book that basically argues that the 1% are, we should worship the 1%. Well, here's really, really great news. It was reported by the Stranger out in Seattle, the alternative newspaper there. This is, they say, the best news ever. Remember the bomb of an Atlas Shrugged movie that came out last year? It was crappy, says the Stranger. Well, it just came out on DVD, and now the Atlas Shrugged Part 1 DVD is being recalled. Do you know why? This is fantastic. Because the DVD packaging reads, Ayn Rand's timeless novel of courage and self-sacrifice. So they put on there that Ayn Rand's book was all about self-sacrifice, which, of course, is the whole opposite of Ayn Rand's message. Ayn Rand's message was all about how nobody should have to sacrifice themselves. So they've recalled this because of the faux pas, to say the least. All right, we're going to go to the phones. On the question of Happy Meals, if you want to weigh in, do you think Happy Meals need to be better regulated? Do you think there should be regulations like San Francisco has passed, saying that fast food companies can't sell Happy Meals to kids with toys unless those meals meet certain nutritional standards? And what about pizza as a vegetable? Do you buy that pizza should be considered a vegetable for purposes of making school lunches more healthy for kids? Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Dee Dee in California. Dee Dee, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Dave. I wanted to comment on the Happy Meal.
Yes, ma'am.
Controversy. I think it's ridiculous. You know, you're a parent. You decide what your kids eat. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Well, there's one problem with that. Hold on a minute. I think there's one problem with that attitude. You are assuming that as a parent, how your kids are marketed to is fully within your control. And I just disagree with that. I mean, here's my take on this, is that I agree with you. You have responsibility as a parent to decide what to buy and what not to buy your kid. I completely and totally agree. But why shouldn't our government be helping us as parents make the right decisions? Why shouldn't our government be helping us as parents do the job we need to do? When a corporation markets to your hold on a minute. When a corporation markets to your kids and they spend a huge amount of money marketing to your kids, they are banking on the fact that they will sell a product to your kids, and then your kids will annoy you so much that you will be basically ground down to accepting and buying that for them. Now, you're right. If you're a super parent, fine. You're right. You don't have to ultimately do it. But what's the danger of a rule that simply makes it a little easier to be a good parent?
No, I disagree on this one. You don't have to be a super parent. You just have to have a little common sense. That's all.
I understand that, but you're not answering my question. You're not answering my question, Dee Dee. Don't evade the question. What's the danger to society? You are avoiding my question. What's the danger to society to have a regulation in place that makes it a little easier to be a good parent? I agree with you. You need to be a responsible parent. I'm stipulating that. But what's the bad part of let's say San Francisco, saying that a Happy Meal needs to meet basic nutritional standards. What's going to happen that's bad? Why should the government not do that?
Because in this case, I think the government should use its resources to regulate or worry about other, like, way more pressing issues.
Well, the government doesn't have to worry. The government doesn't have to worry about it. It passes a law. It says if you're going to sell a Happy Meal, it's got to be meet these criteria. You still aren't answering the question. If you're against a proposal, it suggests you think that proposal would do bad by society. What horrible consequences happen if the government says...
I don't think it's a horrible consequence. I think it's a waste of time.
A waste of time. It's passing a regulation. It's saying you can only sell it if it meets these criteria. Maybe you and I disagree about why to oppose a bill.
That's why I don't oppose it necessarily. I think it's a non-issue.
now you don't oppose it. Well, you started out by saying you opposed it now and saying it's ridiculous. Now you're saying you don't oppose it. Okay. Well, I guess I convinced you. Dee Dee, thanks for the call. Thanks for the discussion. We'll go to Lynn calling in from Washington State. Hey, Lynn, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, I wanted to speak about the pizza, but actually I'd rather respond to what that woman just said. I think she is an example of why it is so important for the food to be regulated. What you put in your child's body is so important, and her thinking that it's a non-issue, I'm a parent of four and I study nutrition informally, thinking that it's not important is unbelievable to me, just unbelievable.
Let's be clear. She wasn't saying that she doesn't think it's important. What she's saying is, well, if you're a good parent, you don't have to, you know, then you don't need this law. And this is the typical argument against what how conservatives call it the nanny state. Well, you know, you should just be a good parent, be a good person, and you don't need the government to regulate these things. My take as a parent is, listen, you're right, I need to be a good parent to my son Isaac. I need to make sure he doesn't eat Happy Meals. Fine. But, like, what's wrong if my city passes a regulation making it easier for me to be a good parent? Isn't that what what we want from our government?
This is really a very complicated issue because I am a parent who, like I said, I study nutrition informally, and most parents that I know and I talk to, they find me kind of annoying because, you know, I'll talk to them about, you know, you don't want to buy your kids food that has MSG, that has high fructose corn syrup, that has hydrogenated oils. That means you have to read labels, and they don't want to do that. Most people want to trust that the government is there to protect them.
That's exactly right.
They don't want to be talked about it because it requires more effort.
Well, but hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. I mean, I definitely agree with you that most people don't want to, but I don't necessarily blame people because look, people are strapped for time. They're working two, they're working three jobs. And so you and I think are agreeing that if the government can do something simple, like say, hey, a Happy Meal needs to be, meet basic health standards, meet basic nutrition standards. If the government can do that, and it's not a big burden, then that's what we want from our government. We want our government to make it easier to be a good parent. I don't understand why that's controversial. Lynn, thanks for your call. We will take a very quick call. We'll go to Mary calling in from San Jose, California. Mary, you got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. Intrinsically, according to what I heard as your first question, Happy Meals intrinsically are not that bad. It's up to the parents to make sure that you don't take your children to McDonald's more than once or twice a month. If you do it all the time, it's going to be very bad. McDonald's makes it easy because they make it cheap. And most parents are looking for cheap lunches out when they take their kids on an outing.
Well, let's be clear. McDonald's doesn't just make it cheap. Our taxpayer dollars make it cheap. When we subsidize cheap corn to make it cheaper than it actually is, that means cheap meat, cheap corn products, cheap corn syrup. So we are actually subsidizing it to be less expensive than it is. In other words, we're creating an economic incentive for parents who are strapped for cash to actually feed their kids fast food. So let's just be clear about that. I still disagree. I think that we need, in practical ways, to say that if a corporation is going to market to children, it has to follow some basic rules of nutrition. If a company is trying to get at my kid, commercial speech is not as protected as political speech under the First Amendment. And corporations, as much as people call them a person, they don't have a right without any strings attached to market to my kid.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Coming up next, we're going to get an update on the Super Committee from Talk Radio News. What's the latest? Stick around. I'm David Sirota, filling in for Tom Hartman. You can instant message me, email me, davidsirota.com. We're getting some more of your emails about all the things we've been talking about this morning. This is from Colby, who writes in, Happy Meals are not marketing to your kid. Your kid can't go down and buy one. So who's being suckered? You, when you talk about regulating Happy Meals. Obviously, this person isn't a parent. You send your kid to school with lunch money? Guess what? Your kid can go walk down to the fast food joint and buy some food, especially if it's marketed to them. And sometimes we got fast food right in the schools. So anybody who thinks your kid can't go buy things on their own either has a kid who's a bubble boy from Seinfeld or hasn't been a parent. Colby, I would respectfully suggest that you should try experiencing being a parent before you talk about what it may be like. All right, we're going to go to Talk Radio News right now for an update on the latest of what's going on in Washington. Some news out of the Super Committee, or some, at least hopefully, some news out of the Congressional Super Committee. Joining us now is Victoria Jones of Talk Radio News. The Super Committee, of course, the committee to try to bring down the national debt. Victoria, what's the latest from the Super Committee? I keep hearing that it's stalled, that nothing's happening. Is that true or is that not true?
Oh, it's true. There's no white smoke coming out of the Super Committee right now. But House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi had some interesting things to say today in her weekly press conference. And by the way, the leaders, Boehner, Reid, Pelosi, McConnell, everybody is sort of saying, no, we're not taking over yet. But Pelosi was very interesting today. She said the sequester is what it is. She also said there are some who think or have suggested that the oath to Mr. Norquist, and we all know who that is more important than other oaths that members take. This is a reference, of course, to a pledge that many Republicans have taken to never raise taxes ever. She said, we would rather there be a better way to do this, but if you refuse to take one red cent from the wealthiest people in our country, and the price we have to pay is the diminished defense and the diminished strength of our country, I think that something is wrong here. That could be avoided. She also talked about Medicare. She said, if the plan is to reject the Bush tax cuts and to repeal the Medicare guarantee for our seniors, well, that's not balanced, and that's a place we cannot go.
How much time do we have now? I mean, I know that there are automatic cuts that are going to happen if the Super Committee doesn't come up with something, and I just don't know the deadline. How much? What kind of timetable are we on?
Yeah, it's tick-tock. Well, they have to vote by Wednesday, this coming Wednesday. But there's a general consensus that they pretty much need a handshake by tomorrow or Saturday, because the numbers have to get to the Congressional Budget Office so they can crunch them and work out whether they add up, because the legislative language has to be written by Monday, because it then has to sit there for 48 hours so everybody can sort of read it, so they can have it read by Wednesday for the vote. So as you see, they really need to get it done very, very quickly.
Is part of the dynamic happening here that Republicans don't mind automatic across-the-board cuts if there's no agreement? In other words, is there an incentive for Republicans simply not to cut a deal because they want to see spending cuts anyway, and if there is no deal, there are now automatic spending cuts enacted?
There's an incentive for some Tea Party Republicans for automatic across-the-board cuts because they're not concerned about defense cuts so much. But for mainstream Republicans, they don't want those defense cuts, and they're actually going to try and do, as are some Democrats, everything that they can to make sure that these cuts don't come into place in 2013. So that's the next thing that you're going to see. There is one way that they can maybe try and get out of this. That is that they're actually allowed to cut a lesser deal than the $1.2 trillion deal. They could cut a deal of just a few hundred billion dollars. And then the cuts that come into effect would be for the difference between, say, the few hundred billion and the $1.2 trillion. and they wouldn't bite so much.
But of course that would kick it down the pike. I mean, because yes. The super committee has to. This is not just there's no deal and then cuts happen and that's it. I mean, and then they wash their hands of it. This is going to be an ongoing story. It's a huge, huge story, and I'm guessing nobody is surprised to hear that it is continuing to stall. Victoria Jones with Talk Radio News. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up in our next hour, at the top of the hour, we're going to be talking to famed Rolling Stone journalist Matt Taibbi about a new report that says federal prosecution of financial fraud has fallen to a two-decade low. Matt Taibbi is an award-winning journalist covering the financial industry. There's been some new arguments being made right now. A lot of people have brought up this idea that there seem to be more law enforcement resources being thrown at the peaceful Occupy Wall Street protests than have been deployed against to prosecute basically the criminals on Wall Street. Why is that? A number of people have started saying, a number of conservative pundits, well, listen, you know, maybe what Wall Street did wasn't so great, wasn't so nice, but it was perfectly legal. That the real problem was that we made things that maybe shouldn't have been legal, legal. Is that actually true? Is it true that Wall Street, in the lead up to the collapse that has hurt so many Americans being foreclosed on, lost their job, is it really true that Wall Street was just doing things that may not have been nice, may not have been moral, but were perfectly legal? We're going to talk to Matt Taibbi about that. Then coming up in our next hour as well, at 19 after the hour, we're at war. We still have troops in Iraq. We still have troops in Afghanistan. We're waging a proxy war in Yemen. We're waging a proxy war in Western Pakistan. Now we are waging potentially a new war in Nigeria and a new war, a new part of the drug war, a militarized version of the drug war down in Central America. And yesterday, are we planning to go to war with China, a new permanent base in Australia being deployed specifically to try to contain, or some may say saber rattle at, China? And China is nervous. Is this the permanent American empire on the march? We'll go inside those stories coming up in the next hour as well. And then also one other set of stories we're going to go over. Are those TSA body scanners dangerous for your health? Europe seems to think they're dangerous for your health. So why is the TSA canceling a health safety test on the same devices? We'll go inside all those stories with me, David Sirota, coming up in the next hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Show me the money! Show me the money!
Do you love this segment?
I love the blessing! Show me the money!
That is exactly what Wall Streeters are saying right now in light of this new report finding that federal prosecution of financial fraud has fallen to a two-decade low under the Obama administration. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. We've been having a pretty contentious discussion. I'm getting your emails at davidsirota.com. If you want to weigh in on the discussion, you can email me. Feel free to do that or give us a call, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Or if you're a conservative, 866-745-2667. That's 866-745-CONS. We've got a busy hour coming up, as always. Coming up at 19 after the hour, the latest new base in the American Imperial Project. Why are we setting up a new base in Australia? And what does it have to do with China? That's coming up. But right now, as I said, federal prosecution of financial fraud falling to a two-decade low, according to new Justice Department figures. What does it mean? And are folks on Wall Street as excited as Jerry Maguire? Are they screaming, show me the money? Or have we already really shown them the money? Joining us now to break down this report is Rolling Stone magazine's award-winning reporter, Matt Taibbi. Matt, thanks for your time. The question I have in this report is a talking point. It's a question about a talking point that comes up often. Well, say some Wall Street apologists, say some defenders of the Obama administration. The prosecution levels have gone down because the folks on Wall Street didn't do anything illegal. Maybe they did something immoral. Maybe they've done things that aren't very nice. Maybe they have done things that aren't very right. But the laws were such that they were allowed to do what they did in advance of the meltdown, in advance of the housing collapse. What's your response to that?
No, I mean, that's absolutely crazy. You know, William Black, who was a former federal regulator, you know, he estimated that during this period, the mortgage bubble, that there were probably a million fraud cases a year going on. There was an epidemic of fraud across the entire industry during this whole period of the mortgage bubble that began with companies like Countrywide and New Century, which were serially committing fraud in giving out mortgages to people who probably shouldn't have gotten mortgages. They were falsifying FICO scores, they were falsifying income levels, they were giving to people who didn't have identification, who weren't citizens, and then they were taking those loans, and banks like Goldman Sachs and Citigroup were knowingly packaging those loans that they knew were defective or fraudulent to insurance companies, to pension funds, and that was fraud too. When you take a knowingly defective product and you market it as something that isn't defective. Aside from that, there are hundreds of whistleblowers who have brought complaints to the SEC for an astounding variety of crimes, ranging from Enron-style accounting fraud. I was yesterday interviewing a whistleblower who witnessed an extraordinary amount of fraud at one of the major credit card companies. They were selling defective credit card accounts to debt buyers. There's so much fraud that for prosecution levels to decline is just basically unfathomable.
Is it possible that they've declined, and I don't want to go out of my way to be an apologist for the Obama administration, is it possible they've declined because one of these situations where there's so much fraud, as you say, that they don't even know where to start? Could that be it, or is there something else going on?
I don't think that's what it is. I think that the Obama administration has largely accepted the talking point explanation that most of what went on was legal. I'll give you an example. You know, you had the SEC brought a fraud case against Goldman Sachs for a deal called Abacus, where they misrepresented how a bunch of mortgages or mortgage-backed assets were picked when they were selling them to a couple of European banks. Abacus was just one of many deals where basically the same kinds of fraud were going on, but the SEC decided only to pursue this one case, even though they had evidence of four or five other basically identical cases. We had a similar situation last week with Citigroup, where they were only prosecuted really for one case where they had five or six in the can that they could have brought. So even when they had the evidence to bring these cases, they didn't do it, and they didn't bring in criminal cases. They only did civil settlements with all these people. So that's not a valid excuse.
What about this notion that this may ultimately, this is not just about prosecuting people who did the crime on Wall Street in the past, that if the Obama administration, if even state attorneys generals don't prosecute people, it will create almost a legally binding precedent that this kind of thing will be allowed. Is there a danger of that?
Absolutely. I think the best evidence you can get of that is the foreclosure scandal, where you look and essentially every one of these companies, that these big banks that is bringing all these foreclosure actions, they're committing mass perjury, essentially, by robo-signing these documents. You know, they've obtained these mortgages, and they don't have the documentation to show the chain of custody, how they obtained them. So they've put these, you know, 22-year-old kids in back rooms, and they tell them to sign affidavits saying they have personal knowledge of how the bank came to obtain this property. That's perjury. And they're doing it in a sort of factory-style fashion, where they're having people sign 400, 500, 1,000 documents a day. When the government overlooks, you know, 1,000 cases of perjury a day, you know, that's the precedent that crime is just not going to be prosecuted.
Or at least white-collar crime. I mean,
right.
What's interesting about this is happening at a time when so many police resources, law enforcement resources, and you made this point very eloquently in one of your recent articles, that so many law enforcement resources are being thrown at criminalizing basic free speech, the Occupy Wall Street movements all across the country. I mean, we're here in Denver. The news is this morning that if you honk in support of the Occupy Denver folks down near the state capitol, you are now getting a ticket. Literally, the police are assessing people tickets for this. So it's certain kinds of crime. Now let's try to get to maybe a glimmer of good news. And again, on the line with us is Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone magazine. The new report out this week: financial prosecutions have hit a two-decade low under the Obama administration. Yesterday, the Nevada Attorney General threw the book at mortgage fraudsters or alleged mortgage fraudsters, 606 felony and gross misdemeanor charges for supervising the robo-signing of documents to speed foreclosures on Nevada residences. Is there a chance that we'll see some good news, if not from the Obama administration, then from various state attorneys generals? What's within their power to do? Is it possible that state attorneys generals, if they got really aggressive, they could actually clean up some of this mess?
Absolutely, because the states were one of the primary victims of the fraud that went on, because the banks, by using a private mortgage registration system. In the old days, when you sold a mortgage, you had to go to your local county office and sign a document and register that sale, and you had to pay a fee. You had to pay a little tax to transfer a mortgage. Well, the banks kind of unilaterally decided they didn't want to do that anymore, so they created this private company called MERS that transferred all these mortgages electronically for much less than they would have had to pay if they had done it legally. And so all of these states were cheated out of hundreds of millions of dollars in what essentially was tax revenue because the paperwork wasn't done. So all of these states are now aggressively trying to recoup that lost money, and I think they have a very good case that they could make a lot of that money back. The Dallas, Texas, for instance, is suing one of the big banks. I think it's Bank of America for $50 million for lost revenue. So,
and this is where it's going. This is where it's going to have to go, is to the states if the Obama administration won't act. Matt Taibbi, the award-winning Rolling Stone magazine reporter, thanks so much for your time today.
All right, thanks, David. Take care.
Coming up next, the new permanent base of the United States military. Where is it? We'll tell you about it coming up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Also coming up later on in the hour, why is Europe banning the TSA screening devices when TSA isn't?
But the thrill we never know is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover.
Flush the bombers, get the subs in launch mode. We are at DEFCON 1.
God, doesn't it feel like that some days? It really feels like that. It feels like that old Cold War feeling, that old domino effect feeling, is starting to creep back into our foreign policy. I'm David Sirota, filling in for Tom Hartman. You can weigh in on the conversation by giving us a call. We're going to switch directions here a little bit. The phone number is 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466. We're going to switch directions to foreign policy and that old war games feeling, that zeitgeist, that Cold War ethos seems to be creeping back into our foreign policy. The era of permanent war, the headline in the New York Times, a U.S. Marine base for Australia. Australia. President Obama, a surprise announcement Wednesday that the United States is going to deploy 2,500 Marines in Australia to shore up alliances in Asia. I guess, is that what they're calling it now? So that's the new Orwellian speak. Remember, what, the Libya war was a kinetic military action. No, kinetic military action. Right. Now we're creating a new permanent base in Australia to shore up alliances. Is that what they're calling it? Newspeak. We are really living in the era of newspeak. The news prompting a sharp response from Beijing, which accused Mr. Obama of escalating military tensions in the region. The agreement with Australia amounts to the first long-term expansion of the American military's presence in the Pacific since the end of the Vietnam War. It comes despite budget cuts facing the Pentagon and an increasingly worried reaction from Chinese leaders who are arguing that the United States is seeking to encircle China militarily and economically. Now, by my count, let's try to count it down here. We have the still ongoing occupation of Iraq. Hopefully that will end, but it hasn't ended yet. We have the ongoing war in Afghanistan. We've got an undeclared war in western Pakistan and in Yemen. We now have a new military base, a forward military posture in Australia. We continue to have permanent bases on the Korean Peninsula and in Germany, among other places, and in Kuwait. Is this the... Oh, I forgot to mention one other. We've got a undeclared militarized drug war happening, according to the New York Times a few weeks ago, down in Central America. So, is this good news or bad news? Do you think this is an appropriate move? Let's just have that conversation. When you hear the news that we are now deploying at a time of budget deficits, at a time of a bloated defense budget, that we are spending a huge amount of money, it's 2,500 troops in a permanent way, is no small expenditure. In Australia, do you hear that as good news or bad news? Is that appropriate? Is that pragmatic? Is that smart? Or does China have a reason to be worried? Should China be worried? Oh, I forgot one other war. U.S. military helping in Nigeria. So we've got folks deployed to Nigeria as well. Is this yet another step in our imperial project? Or is this a pragmatic move? When you hear that news, what is your reaction to it? My reaction to it is that this is an aggressive forward move, that this is exactly what we shouldn't be doing, that this is a way to antagonize China. And I'm not against getting tough with China when it comes to trade, but raising military tensions is, I think, not a really good idea with China. And I think it's part of the imperial project. I think it's an example of how no matter what now is thrown in the face of the military-industrial complex, that military-industrial complex grinds on. It grinds forward. It's really hard to believe. I mean, let's just step back here for a second. A man who campaigned against the war, a man who campaigned against, in part, made a nuanced case against militarism at times, has now initiated a war in Libya, escalated the war in Afghanistan, initiated new wars in Yemen, and is now creating a whole new permanent military footprint in Australia, a forward footprint in Australia. And a footprint, it's worth noting, that the administration itself acknowledges is in part about trying to contain China. Should we be trying to militarily contain China? Would you? And here's another question. Do you fault the Chinese for feeling nervous? Do you fault the Chinese for not being happy about this? Let me ask you a question. Would you be happy about it as an American if China put a base a couple hundred miles away from us? If China, let's say China deployed troops to Mexico, would you be psyched about that? What would your reaction be to that? Let's go to the phones, see what you think. We will go to Alan, calling in from Beverly Hills, California. Alan, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. With 2 billion people in China, 2,500 troops in a friendly country, I think it's great we're in a friendly country. You know, years ago, we had CETO, Southeast Asia, we had CETO, NATO, we had all
so different what, types. So what would your reaction be if China deployed a base to Mexico?
Well, a military base would be kind of, you know, the Russians were in Cuba, but the Chinese are running the Panama Canal.
So you'd be comfortable with China deploying a military base
to
Mexico?
No, I would not.
No, you wouldn't be. But so you expect China to be comfortable with what we did?
It's a very small amount of troops.
Okay, so if China deployed 2,500 troops to Mexico, you wouldn't be comfortable. But if 2,500 troops deployed in the face of China, China should be comfortable with us. Makes perfect sense, Alan. Alan, thanks so much for the call. Really appreciate it. That's a very consistent position. Thanks again for your call. Coming up next, we'll take a couple more calls on this question. Your reaction to the U.S. creating a new permanent base in Australia. Should China be worried? Does China have the right to be worried? How would you feel if China deployed a 2,500-person military base in, let's say, Mexico? Give us a call. We'll debate it. Also coming up next, why is Europe banning airport screening machines that our TSA isn't looking into in terms of health. Stick around for that story.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Also, coming up later on in the hour, why have job discrimination complaints now hit an all-time high? What's that about? We'll go inside those numbers. Welcome back. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. We're talking about the latest part of the Imperial Project here in America, 2,500 Marines being deployed for a permanent base in Australia, trying to contain China. China not too happy about this. Are you happy about it? Would you be happy if China sent 2,500 elite soldiers to, let's say, Mexico to set up a base there? If you wouldn't be happy about that, why are you happy about what we're doing? And let's be clear, and it's important to remember this, we're not just deploying 2,500 Army guys. And no disrespect to the Army. No disrespect to our servicemen in that branch of the armed forces. We're deploying 2,500 Marines. Don't forget that. The Marines are the guys, they're like the elite force. They're the elite combat force. So we're not just sending 2,500 infantrymen. We're sending 2,500 of our elite combat force to set up a base in Australia. Should China be worried? And what is your reaction to it? We're going to go back to the phones in just a second. If you want to weigh in, 866-987-TOM or 866-745-CONS if you're a conservative. Or email me. Go to my website, davidsirota.com. I'm David Sirota filling in for Tom Hartman. I'm a syndicated newspaper columnist, contributing writer to Salon.com, and also the morning host on AM 760 here in Colorado. Very quickly, before we get to the phones, the TSA and Europe, what do those two have in common? Well, not very much, based on two separate stories that happened at the same time yesterday. First, the British newspaper The Metro reporting that the EU is considering, and maybe even moving forward with, a ban on those naked airport scanners across Europe amid cancer fears. The Metro reporting that the devices, widely criticized because they make passengers who go through them appear naked, do emit low doses of radiation. The EU has now told member states not to install them until a scientific assessment of the risks have been carried out. So they're in the first do no harm posture, which to me sounds smart. Unfortunately, our own government is in the, I guess, do harm without even thinking about it, or potential harm. We don't really know what the effects of these are, so it's important to underscore the word potential. But here is the news. The news is TSA puts off safety study of X-ray body scanners. The head of the Transportation Security Administration backing off a public commitment to conduct a new independent study of X-ray body scanners used at the airports the airport security lanes. So the TSA, which had promised to look into the same concerns that the EU is acting on, the TSA is not even going to look into it, according to ProPublica. Really, really disturbing. And frankly, we've seen this attitude over and over again on so many things, haven't we, in the United States? When it comes to drilling for oil and gas, fracking, a lot of questions about, is it contaminating our drinking water by pumping all those chemicals down into the earth? Our government's attitude, frack first, ask questions later. That attitude, it's kind of the opposite of the Hippocratic Oath attitude. Boy, I tell you, it's in stark contrast right now to many other industrialized countries. It's not very reassuring. All right, we're going to go to the phones on the question of the new base in Australia. Is this part of the ongoing American imperial project? Do you think it's a good idea? And if you do think it's a good idea, would you be similarly happy or unconcerned if China sent 2,500 of its most elite soldiers to create a permanent base in neighboring Mexico? Let's go to the phone and see what you think. We'll go to John, calling in from San Francisco. John, you're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, David. I just don't think it's a fair comparison, sending troops, Chinese troops in Mexico and U.S. troops in Australia. We share with Australia, a cultural history. Our origins are the same.
We share a cultural history with Australia. What does that mean?
And a history of alliance. it means that
that there are white people in Australia and there are white people in America. Is that what it means?
No, that we
share a cultural history with Australia. I'm really curious about this. And what we have Crocodile
Western
Dundee
European,
movies.
Western European origins, namely Great Britain, and similar.
Well, John, I don't know if you checked the census lately, but we're on the verge of becoming a majority minority country, a majority non-Western European origin country. So I think what you're really doing, if I may say so,
the United States is still derived from that.
Okay, John, what I would say to you is let's just set those aside, because you're kind of talking yourself into a hole. I think what you're really saying, and you don't want to say it, is that we got a lot of white people in America and Australia has a lot of white people, but let's separate that out. Let's say China has a good relationship with Mexico. Let's say China has a good relationship with Chile. I think they do actually have a good relationship with Chile. Let's say they set up a base within the same concentric circle, miles, radius of the United States as we're setting up near them with their most elite combat troops. You're saying you'd be fine with that, I assume.
I would.
You'd be fine with that.
Okay,
good. Well, that's consistent.
The premise that you just put forth, yes.
So that's consistent.
That's accurate.
At least you're consistent. And what we're going to do here, John, thanks for your call. What we're going to do is we're going to throw it to the rest of the audience. So John says he would be comfortable if China set up a permanent base of its most elite combat troops within a fairly close radius to the United States. As an American, would you be comfortable with that? Because that's the question of whether China should be comfortable with us setting up a permanent base of our most elite troops right outside of China. So would you be comfortable? John said, to be fair and to be consistent, he'd be completely fine with that. I wouldn't be fine with that, but we'll see. We'll see if you'll be fine with it. We'll go to James, calling in from New Mexico. James, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think this is incredibly conflicted, and I think it illustrates an overall dysfunctionality in our overall foreign policy. And I think that because we have facilitated the buildup of the Chinese military economically, and also a huge transfer of technology that has military application. So it's kind of conflicted to say we want to contain China, but then at the same time we're facilitating them to such a large degree.
And let me ask you, let's say China, I mean, my take is this. If China set up a permanent military base with 2,500 of its most elite troops anywhere in the Western Hemisphere, our government would absolutely see it as an act of war. Our government would freak out. Conservatives, liberals would freak out. Do you agree? Don't you? I mean, if there was a sudden headline that China was deploying a permanent military base of 2,500 troops, 2,500 elite combat troops in Brazil, let's say, I think Americans would be up in arms, don't you?
Well, they're administrating they're running the Panama Canal. I'm sure they have in excess of 2,500 security personnel there.
And I don't think it's gotten enough attention about that. I'm trying to do is highlight the hypocrisy.
Highlight that, you know, the Panama Canal is incredibly critical to the United States.
Incredibly
China
critical.
Is administrator in the
United States. You're absolutely right. But my point here is this. My point is a larger point than even the Panama Canal. The obvious point is, and it's really one of my pet peeves, Americans are so wedded to the exceptionalist viewpoint. We get to do whatever we want, and if somebody does to us what we do to them, they're bad, but we're still good for doing to them what we don't want done to us. It's like the opposite of the golden rule, and I think this is part of America's hyper-nationalism, and it goes on the left and it goes on the right. Whatever we do is good, and whatever anybody else does, even if they're mimicking exactly what we do, it's bad. It is one of the worst qualities in individual human beings, and it's one of the worst qualities of our country. And look, I love our country, but it is one of the worst parts of our culture. Let's go back to the phones. We'll see what else you think. We'll go to Joe, calling in from Berkeley. Joe sounds happy that we have deployed elite combat troops to contain China. Joe, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
No, I don't feel happy. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One is, you shouldn't compare the distance of Australia from China to the distance of Mexico.
Well, I mean, Mexico, it could be southern Mexico. I mean, whatever.
It's a long ways. But more importantly, what the Chinese are really upset about here is not, and they should be, is not 2,500 troops. I mean, they have a million-man army. What are 2,500 Marines going to do to them? It's a joke. What it's really about is that the United States is getting the approval of the Australian people to have an active U.S. military base there, which hasn't been the case in the past. And what we can look forward to is a much larger development and the placing of missiles, perhaps including nuclear ones, on Australian soil to supplement the Seventh Fleet, which is already off China.
Well, I think that's an important point. It's not just 2,500 elite troops. They're setting up a base. And bases, as we've seen in the Middle East, bases tend to grow. Once we put a footprint on the ground, we still got troops for how many decades in Korea and in Western Europe. So you're absolutely right to point out that this is not just about the 2,500 troops. Although I really want to stress this. I do think there's something important about the fact that it's not just 2,500 regular army men. This is Marines. There is something there that has been, I think, ignored in the coverage. I mean, it's been mentioned in the coverage, but I think this is not an insignificant point. These are 2,500 of our most elite combat troops. That's a big part of this story. This is not just, you know, a naval base where ships are going to get serviced. 2,500 Marines in the same sphere as China. Of course China's going to be worried. Of course they are. We would be worried if it was the same facing us here in the United States. And don't pretend that we wouldn't. I'm not saying you are pretending that, but don't pretend that we wouldn't. All right, coming up next, a couple last stories, including why job discrimination complaints are hitting an all-time high. And we'll squeeze a couple more calls on our permanent imperial posture.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Also, inside one other study looking at how middle-class areas are shrinking and shrinking badly. Stick around.
Closing time. Open all the doors.
Welcome back. I'm David Sirota, finishing up the Tom Hartman Program, guest hosting today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for bearing with me. I know I'm not Tom. I wouldn't pretend to be Tom. I couldn't pretend to be Tom. The great Tom Hartman. It's been a real honor for when he asked me to do this, so I really appreciate you bearing with me. A couple stories before we got to get out of here, and we'll squeeze a couple more calls on the deployment of 2,500 elite combat troops from the United States, our Marines, to Australia. Are you supportive of this, or do you think it's a bad idea? We'll get to the phones in just a second. Very quickly, the federal agency responsible for investigating employment discrimination charges reporting this week that the number of complaints coming from workers and job seekers has now hit an all-time high. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission received just shy of 100,000 charges from citizens during the 2011 fiscal year. Can't say that's surprising. A lot of folks feeling discriminated against on the basis of the fact that they're unemployed. That is a new trend in the economy. It's hard to get a job if you don't list on your resume that you already have a job. The feds, and I think rightly, and kudos to President Obama for saying that this is the kind of thing that shouldn't be allowed in our economy. Also, one other economic story I want to tell you about before we got to get out of here. A new report saying that the middle class areas, the geographic areas of the United States that have the middle class, are shrinking. The number of middle class income neighborhoods in the United States has dwindled significantly over the past four decades as the rich poor divide deepens across the country. So as the divide has deepened, so has the geography of inequality. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, squeeze a couple more calls about the deployment of troops to Australia. We will go to Cora calling in from the great town of Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Cora.
Hi, David. Well, I think it's a bad idea to do this base in Australia, and it's I don't think Americans, you know, realize what a myopic view we have of the other world. I have a friend in Canada, and even the Canadians get worried about the things we do down here. I mean, it's like living next door to a really touchy neighbor. And I think it's also stupid because so many of our electronic parts for our defense mechanisms aren't made in China.
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up, because here's one of the problems with us taking such a forward military posture with China, among other things. China owns a lot of our debt, so China could make a lot of trouble for us in the fact that it owns our debt. It has some leverage over us, to say the least. Additionally, and you're right to point this out, there are some deep concerns that because we've outsourced so much of our production, and electronic production, to places like China, that then sells back to our Pentagon, that and I'm not making this up, I know it sounds like a conspiracy theory, Wired magazine did a big story on this, but there are concerns that, that the Chinese may be wiring into our military hardware various ways to, let's just put it this way, to make us not such a powerful military. So China has real leverage over us. I'm not saying we should be soft on China, especially when it comes to trade and economics, but what I'm saying is this is a relationship that needs to be handled very carefully. Shoving 2,500 of our most elite combat troops in their face is not a way to handle that relationship, in my estimation, with very much with a delicate, soft touch. And I think that's a real mistake. I think that is a real, real mistake. Let's go back to the phones. Cora, thanks for your call. Let's squeeze Greg calling in from Troy, Michigan. Greg, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll make it fast. I don't think it's a good idea to put 2,500 troops in Australia or anywhere. Australia can take care of Australia. I'm not worried about the consequences of the reaction of the Chinese. I just think it points out the hypocrisy of our economic policies and our political policies when we want to act like the big brother to Australia on one hand militarily and treat China like they're the bad guy. You know, they're the communists. We're diametrically opposed to their whole culture. And on the other hand, we trade with them. They basically, as you said yourself, they basically own us now. So, you know, why it's hypocrisy. It's the two faces of the United States.
And let me, Greg, one-up you on the hypocrisy of it. And this is a really important point that's being lost in all the coverage of it. Have you noticed that any time a priority for the 99%, an economic priority for the 99% is discussed, oh, we don't have enough money, we're on the brink of budget crisis, we don't have any money, we don't have any resources, we can't afford it. Oh, wait a minute, whoa. Somebody wants a base in Australia, a permanent base, 2,500 troops, if not more, a permanent base that's going to cost a lot of money. Oh, no problem, we got money for that. We got plenty of money for that. It's the old idea that our actions expose our own hypocrisy. It's like Barney Frank, the congressman from Massachusetts, said about 9/11. You know, before 9/11, everyone said we didn't have enough money to do anything. Then 9/11 hit, and guess what? Suddenly we had $2-3 trillion to wage wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's the same thing that the deployment to Australia highlights. We don't have any money to do anything, supposedly, but we got plenty of money to deploy 2,500 of our most elite combat troops to Australia to create a permanent base. We got plenty of money to wage an undeclared war in Yemen. We got plenty of money, apparently, to wage a new war in Libya. We got plenty of money for the things that the wealthy and powerful want to do with that money. And the military-industrial complex, don't fool yourself, is one of the big parts, one of the big factors in that wealthiest 1%. The point here is that to become literate about what's going on in this country, we have to look at every decision that our government makes through the larger context of what our government is saying. You cannot argue that we don't have enough money to not, let's say, cut food stamps at a time when you're insisting we got so much money that we can haphazardly build new permanent military bases in places like Australia. And the fact that that's hard to see, the fact that so many of us don't want to see it, whether because we like President Obama because we're a Democrat or because it's just too painful to look at, we have to see it. We have to understand it in those terms and in that context if we hope to be citizens in a democracy. Otherwise, we're just sticking our head in the sand. Hey, thanks for the call. That's the show. Thanks for letting me guest host. Hopefully I filled in and filled in well for Tom. Tom will be back on Monday. I'm David Sirota. If you want to find out more about me, you want to get in touch with me, you want to scream at me about anything I said today, go to my website, davidsirota.com, and email me. And thanks again.
For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.